Welcome to the inaugural show zero of the Babylon Podcast. My name is Summer Brooks.
I'm going to put that on and go into the spot factory and get to work.
My dog and I are being attacked by a duck.
I think I'm kidding, but I'm not.
When you're hungry, you're hungry.
The virgin sits on a crate, opening and closing his pipe.
Stuff has a mind of its own tonight.
I didn't get any entries at all.
Telepaths against mundanes is no contest.
I like Day of the Dead.
I did too.
Hey guys, it's Gary. I'm listening to episode 1.
And God help us all, this is Joe Truman.
Production of the malt liquor beverage Zima.
Nice and close, and I look at him and I go, you are.
Hey there, okay. Actually, let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
Stella, I knew it was a bad idea to record. I knew it was.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And this is Bruce Boxleitner.
April Fools.
You fooled me for a moment there.
It's just Jeffrey. Damn it.
It's not just Jeffrey. It's Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Superstar.
Just Jeffrey.
That Jeffrey Willarth, he's one bad.
Shut your mouth.
Just talk about Jeffrey.
Yes.
I hope Men and Gay push the record button. This is going to be a good episode, I can tell.
We are a bit out of practice because we took a couple weeks off sort of unexpectedly. So thanks to all our loyal fans who have stuck through this sort of semi-hiatus. And for all the new people who are just discovering us, we really don't do this often.
Okay.
Not intentionally every way.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, right. If you say so.
Trust me.
Well, you don't know. You just come and go as you please, like you're a Vorlon or something.
When we start doing it intentionally, it'll be because we're trying to drag our season 5 out to hit, you know, to make it either full season 5 or just barely crawl across the line. Into a season 6.
Yeah, I suspect we'll probably do okay.
Did we crack 200 episodes yet?
Almost. This
is still not there.
This is 193. If we include,
oh, you're kidding.
No, if we include the special episodes, then yeah, we're at 200. The holiday specials that we've done over the past couple years.
We got to go by file numbers. So, I mean, are you saying that our episode numbers and there are specials on top of that?
Yes. So tonight's episode is 193. But we had a couple, like for the past 2 years, we've had 2 or 3 or 4 holiday specials. So we are over the
we've done this 200 times, Jeffrey, yeah. If that's what you're really asking. Yes.
I'm sorry. You're right. Say that out loud?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, your torture meter is correct.
we should be like really, really good at this.
And we didn't get a recall.
We should be really good at it, but we're not.
Hey, yeah. Wait, I'll just double that remark.
Hey, look, we have got feedback-a-palooza like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest, why don't we cut the open short, and then that'll give us extra time to let Jeffrey ramble on and on about all the geeky stuff that we're going to be listening
what?
To.
What? What? Okay.
All right, then we're going to take a really, really, really quick break, and I'm going to go get another frosty beer. And we'll with feedback-a-palooza.
Uh-huh. It's going to be great.
Oh, boy.
Dear Diary. Remember how I told you I was searching for something, but I didn't know what I was looking for?
Well, I finally found it. It's Bite on This, a Vampire Diaries podcast.
It's all about the CW's new hit show, Vampire Diaries.
Every week, Angela and Willie share their commentary on the show and even get the people involved.
They have an amazing website at www.biteonthis.net, where they post all types of things about the show.
And you can email them at podcast@biteonthis.net. And I'm even thinking of calling and leaving a voicemail.
I wish there was a way I could tell everyone to subscribe to the podcast in their favorite podcatcher, like iTunes. But my diary entry is the best I can do.
I'm so lucky that I found the piece that makes my television watching complete.
I must tell everyone to visit biteonthis.net and listen to Bite on This,
a Vampire Diaries podcast.
that.
Yes, do not let...
Doesn't feel like we went away for hardly any time at all.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. our jovial mood is jovial. And because I miss doing this. You know, we had 2 weeks. I had to figure out something different to do on Wednesday nights. And now we come back with a feedback-a-palooza. I am the happy.
It will be a fun feedback-a-palooza, I promise. We have some very interesting voicemails, some very insightful ones. I think we're going to stir some commentary quite a bit here with this.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 184, and the disappointment that at least Jeffrey had was a Drox costume, hoping that it would be something we hadn't seen before. One thing about the Drox, you might have forgotten, was that when they first appeared, they had this strange, out-of-phase special effect to them that they, looked like they were moving very weird and out of phase. And that was, I think, after that first episode, removed because it didn't quite work or was too tough or something like that. So at first they were something completely different, but it was then changed to something more conventional. That's all.
Yeah, you know what? I started watching some Crusade here, and it was Erasing the Night, that first episode. I got to tell you, I don't know that the Drak have ever been particularly convincing.
Interesting.
Yeah, right. I think there's too many,
I'm going out on a limb here, but are there too many conventional, quote, enemies that we know through history or through literature, and they just sort of, you know, their shtick was they had their disease, you know, they had their thing, that their plague that they could do.
Right. Well, I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about the general appearance of
just the way they looked
themselves. Yeah. Glowing red eyes are kind of scaly, you know, I don't know. To me, like, compared to something like the Narn or the Drazi, which the Drazi especially, I think, were very and very inventive. I mean, I think the Narn were cool looking. There's no doubt about it. But as time goes on and the more I've watched the show and, you know, going back through it for the podcast, I really think the Drazi were a really innovative creation. You know, just in terms of the prosthetic and the makeup, there's just something really nice and different enough that it really works. And you know, the Drak just don't, it's just not doing it for me.
The problem I had with the Drak was they were, after the Shadows, they're definitely minor leagues, not even AAA. We're talking single A here. All right. The one who appeared to Jakar in the caverns after saving Londo's life, the something about the body language just spoke, Dastardly Doolittle, you know, the muahaha twirling, twirling handlebar.
Dick Dastardly.
While kneeling beside the railroad tracks, and I'm like, okay, really, really, you're going with that? All right, you have to. Work your way through the Evil League of Evil test scales or something.
All right, if we have as much voicemail as you say, we can't annihilate the drug. You know.
Okay,
we're gonna move it on.
All right,
next.
Step it up.
Well, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 184 and the discussion about Londo's actions and so forth, and Tim says that Londo's an example of what Samir said of doing the right things for the wrong reason. I think it's more of a case of that he's an example of the end not justifying the means. They're using the ends to justify the means, and the means that Londo was doing was so terrible that it did not justify the ends that that he went for. So that's more the case that I see there. That's all.
Well, is that more a question of semantics? I mean, I don't, you know, see, I guess I kind of hear what Neil's saying, but when I hear the phrase, the end justifies the means, to me that there's a colder calculating feel to that, or more vicious isn't the right word, but deadly.
Callous.
Okay. Callous. That's an excellent word. When I think of Londo and the idea that he was doing the wrong things for the right reason, he loves the Centauri Republic. He says it in the beginning. You know, I've been married four times, but I only have one love. And to me, that all his actions aren't the actions of someone who thinks that the end justifies the means with that callousness that you've just mentioned, Summer, you know, mm-hmm. using that word.
Yeah, that's more Cartagia's shtick.
Right, right. Good example.
Yeah. I think they both just like the wardrobe.
This is Neil from Bowie. Just listening to the end of show 185 as you were running out of things to talk about. And was mentioning board game, which I don't know anything about the board game, but I do know about the collectible card game. And there's plenty of stuff that you could talk about regarding the collectible card game. You know, there's loads of stuff on the web about that. It was a real fun game. And anyway, when you want to talk about that, I'll be happy to pipe in with some more information and some experiences with that. That's all. Bye.
Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah, we will eventually talk about the collectible card games and some of the higher profile B5 collectibles. And Neil, you are more than welcome to join us to lead that conversation, because I decided early on that I was going to collect the trading cards. And then, you know, the scrounging, never-ending hunt for the special cards, the limited edition cards, that became a mission. And the guy at the card shop
said, an obsession.
A little bit. And the guy at the card shop said, have you seen these collectible card game cards for Babylon 5? It was, you know, literally like, you know, putting five chocolate cakes in front of a diabetic. I'm like, what the? So I bought two boxes of the cards, and I'm going through the cards, and then I realized, oh, wait, this is magic, the Krakening here.
Yeah.
I can't do this.
Mystic Warriors, because,
No, it's like it's worse than Evercrack. Yeah. Magic the Gathering, I knew people who fell into that hole and never came out. You know, magic was a precursor to meth. I'm certain of it. and I took
contact through the cards.
I did. I took the cards back and I said,
oh, my God.
No, the collectible card game, the CCG.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Took back to the store to a group that did trading. I'm like, anybody who will trade me X-Men cards or Babylon 5 cards or Xena cards, here. I will give you these. Just, you know, give me something else. Hell, give me $20. I'll take a loss on it. Just get these things away from me. So no, I never spent the $52,000 to collect all of the B5 CCG cards. I got out early. But yeah, I'd love to talk about them, because I heard a lot of people were B5 fans who played the game and liked it. People who weren't B5 fans but who were big fans of CCGs enjoyed it also.
Yep.
So I would love to talk about it, but I extricated myself from that money hole early on.
No, you're absolutely right. That's a huge audience. It's a niche within this niche, and they got a lot to say, and they're still spending a lot of money. You know, when our friend Peter sent us that thing from Norway the other night about some purchase that he had acquired, congratulations to him on that. But it got me looking around eBay some more for some of the collectible stuff that's out there, and I was like blown away. But the greatest density within all of that is the collectible cards.
Yep.
Hands down, you know.
And I'm not immune to the B5 collectibles thing. I'm just a lot more selective now since I have a lot of cool stuff, some of which can't be replicated. But I would, you know, if I had the means, I would get one of the real PPG props out there. I would.
Yep. I just want a PPG.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. This is Father Beast from Sandy, Utah. Just got done listening to your geeking on the last episode of 2261 or 2262, Objects at Rest. You know, they had that scene. That's the scene when I watched this episode over. I gotta watch that where they match rotation with the station. And they have that salute across space, and my wife just started, you know, roaring out the tears. They're just running down her face. And I was looking at these people, saying, yeah, you know, goodbye. You know, all the replacements were there they got the new doctor, the new security chief. Well, he's been in charge for a couple of years, but new captain, the new director of operations instead of a first officer in the form of Corwin, and the new Narn and Centauri ambassadors. But guess who's missing? Where's the new Minbari ambassador? Is the Minbari just not maintaining are the Minbari just not maintaining ambassador to Babylon 5 now? Or, you know, and if they're not maintaining an ambassador, then just what are the ambassadors from the Narn and the Centauri doing there? You know, just, you know, sitting there having drinks and stuff? You know, is Babylon 5, you know, not important enough to send a Minbari ambassador to? So Halon and Veer are basically just jokes to their government, and, you know, send them to this place which has no significance anymore? But I'd like to hear what you guys have to say about that.
I feel bad. That's how I feel. You want to know what I think? I feel bad. You're right. Oh, that sucks. There's Minbari ambassador. Every time we have a party, they pull the same stuff with us. I hate that. You want to know where the Minbari ambassador was? In the bathroom. If you know Minbari like I know Minbari, they have bladders of kittens. Okay, they just go to the they pee all the time.
I think part of the problem was there was never a protege groomed to take over for the Minbari, because technically Lanier was her protege, but I don't see him ever being an ambassador. I really don't.
Go ahead.
And also, with the Interstellar Alliance being based on Minbar now, I'm curious how intertwined the Minbari government is going to be with the Alliance. Maybe they don't have to send somebody away to get stuff done, because Babylon 5 at this point is more Alliance property than it is EarthGov's. So Babylon 5 is more about interacting with the entire Interstellar Alliance, and the Alliance headquarters are on Minbar.
I would also suggest that after Sinclair shuffles off this mortal coil and goes back 1,000 years to start the whole thing up over again, I wonder if part of it is just the state of flux that the Minbari government finds itself in, trying to reestablish itself in the wake of the dissolution of the Grey Council. I would also venture to say that because Babylon 5 had fulfilled its place in prophecy, that the Minbari were ready to move on strictly based on that. It served its purpose. It did what it needed to do. We're on to the next thing, and it has no value to send a representative there.
Okay.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. This is Father Beast from Santa Utah. And I'm going to try and get my my voicemail comment in about Sleeping in Light before you actually do the show. I don't know if I've made it or not.
Well, you did, sort of.
You know, I've been considering myself, you know, a real man's man, and don't cry for things. But, you know, sometimes, you know, the things I do cry for are a little strange, because my experience with Star Trek was, I saw Star Trek 2. I didn't cry when Spock died in Star Trek 2, but I did cry when it blew up the Enterprise in Star Trek 3. And I thought I was going to have knowing that it was coming, I thought I was going to have the same experience with, when Sheridan died and when they destroyed the Babylon station. So I was pretty sure I was going to see these things. Then I did, and I didn't cry when Sheridan died, and I did cry when they blew up the Babylon station. But looking back over it, I realized the point where I started crying was when Straczynski walks up, and I recognized him. And I knew he said, doing cameos like Knitter and some of the other producers have done. Yeah, I don't do that sort of thing. But there he was, and he flips the switch to turn off the lights. And that was the part where I started crying. And I guess it continued on all the way through the credits when they were showing each of the characters and. What they look like, where they, you know, the shots of them from when they began the show and then again from when they ended the show. And, that was, you know, just amazing how much everyone had changed throughout the whole series. And I guess there might be something human to me after all. Bye.
I'm pretty sure you are listening to the Dr. Phil Show. We'll be right back after this.
JMS had gone on record as saying the reason he didn't do cameos for Babylon 5, and there's, I was referring specifically to the scene where Viren and Lanier are having a drink in the Zocalo, discussing their common woes. And the bottom line was that Joe felt that if he sees himself on film, it would destroy the verisimilitude of the universe. He would cease to believe it. But I guess it was different when they were finally throwing the switch to turn it all off.
And maybe it was just me, but I thought crashing the Enterprise was sort of like the equivalent of a parking mishap, sort of like driving your car accidentally off the roof of the 5-story parking garage.
No, it wasn't that way at all.
Really?
That was one of the good times. Oh, yeah, because they were trying to, they had been cornered by Klingons, and they're trying to get out, and so they allow the Klingons to beam over, whose ships were damaged, and they beamed out instead of to self-destruct, and as they're trying to get Spock's chakra back with his body, and they're standing there on this mountaintop watching the Enterprise crash through the atmosphere, and Kirk goes, "My God, Bones, what have I done?" And McCoy's response was, "What you've always done, Jim. You've turned death into a chance for life." Oh, it was fantastic. But it was sad. So there you go.
Hey, Babcasters, it's Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm listening to the latest Deep Geeking, I think it's Objects in Motion. And you're talking about number one from Mars. And honestly, I like the whole gimmick. I liked her with Steven. I even like the actress. It works in a lot of ways for me. But I don't see anywhere where she has any experience dealing with other alien races. It was never shown to us or even really hinted at in any way that I can see. And I just have to call, you know, shenanigans on her leading a covert operation that's going to deal with multiple alien races and worlds. I don't doubt that she's very talented on Mars and probably even with human beings in general. But as an actual, you know, covert person with aliens, I just have not seen any evidence presented that she'd do very well. Garibaldi, you know, had years on Babylon 5 before he, in a sense, assumed that position, and he's well used to interacting with different alien races and cultures and things of that nature. I just don't see where number one had that kind of experience. So I'm going to have to just say, I don't think she is a very good fit for covert operations. If JMS would ever gift us with future storylines, perhaps he can show her being very accomplished. But I'm just not seeing it now. Take care, guys. Bye.
You know, that's an interesting point, Gary. I had never even given that much thought. I would assume that the reason Sheridan tapped her was simply because she had the potential. And, you know, in some ways she reminded me of Garibaldi. You know, that tenacity, that willingness to dispense with the politeness of civilized people to get right to the point. And maybe that's what Sheridan saw and said, okay, well, you know, she's Garibaldi enough, Garibaldi-like enough in order to get the job done.
Hey, Badcasters, it's Gary, and I'm listening to you guys continue to deep geek, of course. And I have to say, as strong as these last few episodes were, and they're, I don't know if they're among the, like, top five, but definitely excellent pieces of work. One of the things that I just stretched my credulity a little bit much was this whole thing that everyone was leaving at virtually the same time. I understand it probably had something to do with massive amounts of plutonium in the superstructure, but it just made it seem a little less believable and just a little bit on the hokey side that everyone is, you know, leaving, gosh, within like a week or two of each other after all they've been through, probably the enemies that they still have out in the universe, especially in Earth Force. And it just rang a little hollow that everyone was leaving at almost the same time. That's my two cents. I'd love to hear what Tim, Summer, and our new buddy Brett thinks of the whole situation. Take care, guys. Bye.
Oh, he doesn't even care what I think.
Well, Jeffrey,
I'm crushed. Okay, so here's what I want to know. How long, honestly, Gary, is that drive that you have in the vehicle? If you have that much time that you come up with this stuff, I'm taking a journey with you, man. I'm packing a bag. I'm coming there. I'm going to go for the long ride. Now, if he is truly, imagine if Gary doesn't have a long commute and he still comes up with this stuff while he's driving in the car.
Whoa. I sit in the parking lot.
He's one with the universe per mile.
Or maybe his commute from the home of Jacksonville via the Florida Keys and back again. I don't know.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. This is Father Beast from San Diego, Utah. And I'm thinking again about objects at rest. After hearing your great thing, me and my wife decided to sit down and watch it again, and I have to say that Arkel's grandma has got really something to complain about, because I watched Lanier's, reaching for the pad, turning away and backing off, running, and then turning back, saying, I can't do it, and I realized that was totally out of character for Lanier. Lanier, you know, might in the heat of the moment do something that, but he clearly had time to consider that, you know, that he might be offing Sheridan in this. And I'm thinking that Stravinsky had just planned for the betrayal of Lanier to pull this thing all along,
And he'd been trying to build up to it, and it just wasn't working, because Lanier's character is just a really incorruptible type. And so when he when it came time, being as he didn't have the real character in place, he just sort of faked it and made some sort of lame excuse for it. So I think Garfield's grandma really got something to complain about, because that was really not in character for Lanier to do. Bye.
I thought that was the point.
Yeah, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, he touches on the concept of character versus, lack of a better term, heat of the moment. He had a different word for it. But a number of experiments that he cites in the book show that people behave in a particular way, very much dependent upon the circumstances in which they're in. And I would say that Lanier's initial reaction to turn and leave Sheridan to die was one of those moments where it wasn't about character. It was about just being in a different place than he thought he would. Because if you think about it, he ran away, and then that gave him a moment to calm down, and he goes back. But at that point, it's too late. Sheridan's already freed himself. So I don't think it's particularly out of character. I think, like you said, Summer, I think that's part of the point, was that it was not what you normally expect him to do, but it was. I thought it was still believable.
But it was a weak betrayal. I'm sorry. If that's what they're referring to, it was a weak betrayal.
Well, a voice from the past? How did you arrive here?
No, it was a voice.
You can't just walk in and start giving us crap.
it's like Star Trek. I beam myself in.
Your mama didn't teach you no manners. No way.
I'm like a lurker from down below.
Yes, folks, it's Brett.
It's Brett back from vacation, or the dead, or both, whatever you want to call it.
Please don't bring up the dead with Tim around.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, but
don't set me off.
Going back to the voicemail, I believe that's why they call it a momentary lapse of reason. Great Pink Floyd album, by the way.
It was.
And so, yeah, that's why it's such a shock. I don't know if you'd call it a betrayal, because, you know, a betrayal is more like what Garibaldi did.
There's more thought and scheming behind a betrayal.
Malicious intent, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Also, I'm being taken to task in the chat room for claiming that the Enterprise crashing was not emotional, and I've discovered that there were two crashes. I'm thinking of the second one in Generations.
Generations, yeah, okay.
What's the first one are they referring to, from Star Trek 3?
Star Trek 3, yeah.
That's not a crash. It was a burn-up in the atmosphere.
And it was a self-destruction to save the...
Yeah.
There was still
at worst, you get a parking ticket for that.
Right.
Totally agree.
Someone was comparing the emotional quality of it. I'm like, okay, that one is a little bit more. But, you know, the face plant and the planet at the end of Generations, I don't think so.
No, that was kind of ridiculous, actually. I will have to go off on that tangent another time. Roll the next voicemail.
Hey, Summer, Jeffrey, Tim. You guys were talking about Babylon 5 Silk. This is Doug in Bremerton again. And you've missed a few that I've mentioned once before in an email, but apparently it got lost in the ether. Sympathy for Mr. Morton by Jeff and Maya Bonhoff. Byron by Jeff and Maya Bonhoff. Bested by Echo's Children. Oh Garibaldi by Echo's Children. Rest in Me by Echo's Children. Ivanova's Lament by the Duras Sisters. Messages from Earth by the Duras Sisters. Listen to Me by the Duras Sisters. Nine Voices, Duras Sisters. Trick of the Time, Duras Sisters. And that's just the basic B5 filk that I have been able to pick up. So there's three new groups for you to check out. The Bonhoffs, Echo's Children, and the Dora Sisters. All information about all can be found on the web. Have a good day.
That was an infomercial. In the middle of our show, there was an infomercial. That was wonderful. That was great.
Yeah.
I have some Googling to do when we're done here.
That's wonderful. I had no idea where that was going.
Hey, Badcasters, it's Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm listening to you guys discuss what viewing order to view Crusade in. Well, if I can throw my 2 cents into the hat there, I would suggest the JMS version. The production order, the original airing order, seems somewhat inconsistent with the actual storyline. It doesn't really flow. I know I watched it the first time on the DVDs in the regular DVD order, and that, to the best of my knowledge, is production order when the episodes were actually shot, and that can really screw up some things. If you watch it in JMS's order, that seems to work the best for me. There's only one odd scene where Lockley meets Gideon a second time, but it's the first time they're introduced, and it's a little weird, but other than that one little bit of big continuity error, the rest flows pretty well, and the storyline makes a lot more sense to me. That's my 2 cents. Take care, guys. Bye.
You know, I understand all that, but I still kind of keep going back to the broadcast order, if for no other reason that's how it was presented to us.
Wait, I could barely hear you there, Brett. What was that?
Oh, sorry about that. I said I never actually watched it, so I really don't know the best order to watch it. I mean, it was over and gone before I actually like even knew it was aired.
Well, we know the DVD order is not the quote preferred order.
It's not the JMS sanctioned order.
The DVD order is the same as the aired order, so we're gonna have to rearrange that a little bit.
Are we?
I don't know. You know, it's a matter of how you look at. I always enjoyed the TV order because I'm a freak of TV, so that's what was handed to me. My favorites are the VHS recordings I have of the original broadcast with the commercial still in place. That's that's still cool for me. You know.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that. We'll have to hash this out. Mm-hmm. In a closed session.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hey, Badcasters, it's Gary from Jacksonville, and I just wanted to welcome Brett to our little corner of the Babylon 5 universe and this new section of Farpoint Media for him. And if I could talk to him for a second. Hey, Brett.
Hey. Hi.
What are you thinking? They're nuts. Get out while you can. Quick. I would suggest running, hopping down Mike's stairs, and hopping out the back patio doors. Do it while you still can. Once Summer draws you in, you can never get out again. Oh, Summer. Hi, Summer. Oh, no, I left the Babylon podcast. I wouldn't miss an episode. I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
You're so busted. You're so busted.
So he tells me this 6 weeks after I start? Gee, thanks, pal. Right on time.
No, to be fair, Brett, he probably sent it in 6 weeks ago, but we're just only getting to it now.
Yeah.
See, that's what you have to learn about the Babylon podcast is the timely manner in which we get to our feedback.
It's like Al Pacino from Godfather 3. They keep pulling me back.
Wait, I thought that was Jeffrey's line.
Yeah. If I had a nickel.
Jeffrey's line is they keep drinking my tequila. Yeah.
That's terrible. That was good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you guys made it to Sleeping in Light. I didn't think it would come so soon. Where did the time go?
Hey, guys. It's Guile from Toronto, Canada. Called a few times in the podcast history, and I just want to congratulate you to making it to Sleeping in Light. Not that I didn't think you would make it, it's just that when I first started listening to the podcast, I knew that you guys would get around to it, just didn't think this day would come, you know, because I thought, oh, that's going to take them a while, and a while it did. I know
much longer than Mike and Jeffrey wanted, but here we are. I just want to give you my thoughts on Sleeping in Light. I think it's a benchmark for our series finale. Not perfect. Maybe I would give it a 95%, you know. It's hard to watch. I can't watch it with people around me. I need to go to my fortress of solitude somewhere or hide and just watch it so nobody could see me crying. Pretty much, I think that's a universal consensus on that. Why I would mark it a 5% off, it's just that I don't buy that the station would be scuttled the way it was. I mean, I can understand why they did it, but I mean, to say that it was a navigational hazard, I don't buy it. I mean, I thought maybe some interest group would buy it, you know, run it as an outpost of some sort. I don't get it. I really don't. But like I said, I understand why they did it. It was a beautiful explosion. You tear up when you see it, and, you know, you get the series going off with a bang. So here's to many more podcasts with deep geeking. You guys are like my little audiobook when you guys do the deep geeking. I could see the images in my head as you guys deep geek. So I could still remember what goes on in the episode thanks to you guys. And I know Mike and Jeffrey don't want to hear that. I want the podcast to go longer, but hey, I mean, you guys are one of my favorite podcasts, so keep it going, please. And hopefully I'll chime in on the Day of the Dead feedback of Palooza, because now that we have Neil Gaiman writing for another show that I love, Doctor Who. Thanks, and keep up the great work, guys.
You know what? Jeffrey sees images in his head, too, when we start deep geeking.
I'm pretty sure he's a Sherpa, because it's actually walking up Kilimanjaro. That was ridiculous. I feel bad. Good God. That's it. The Babylon podcast has made it to the top of K2.
Yeah. We're everywhere.
That was brilliant. Wow.
Hey, you know, I do want to address something that I've often thought about but didn't get to when we geeked on Sleeping in Light, and it was the reasons for the destruction of the station. And I don't buy the menace to navigation either. I think, though, that's the official line. I think what it is, given what we know of history of EarthGov with the Interstellar Alliance, I think what they were doing was eliminating a symbol of the hated Interstellar Alliance.
What?
Yeah.
The Interstellar Alliance was still going. How could it be?
No, I understand that, but that's the first blow in that. When you start looking at deconstruction of falling stars and 500 years, 1,000 years down the line, the extreme lengths to which they would go to discredit Sheridan, Delenn, and the members of the Interstellar Alliance, you know, that they fabricate digital constructs. Yes?
You're really, really reaching here.
Yeah, I got to call shenanigans there, bud. I hate to tell you. I mean, yeah. In all love, yeah, you're reaching.
I give you this as an example. We know that EarthGov, the spaceships, are sort of an extension of the Navy. What does the Navy do with ships that have been decommissioned that aren't going to be turned into floating museums? They scuttle them.
Yeah.
This was the same as scuttling a ship.
Although the one thing you brought up there, and it was a great point, is something as significant as Babylon 5 was, the only station to actually make it and do well, you'd think that there'd be some measure of historical value in that as a museum, as like we have. You can't really tow it to the Smithsonian, for the love of God, but you can bring the Smithsonian to it. I didn't buy it as a menace to navigation. I thought that was just like, well, we got to give them some reason. But I think there's other things they could have done with it. But then again, having it turned into like Disney World in space probably wouldn't have been as cool an ending.
Talk about your deep space franchises.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I was
also
giving it my pouty face for a while there.
Sorry.
You know, here's the other thing I'll throw out there to you, Tim. This all happened. That stuff was all being written at the time when the dialogue about the fate of Space Station Mir was in the news. Okay, so there perhaps is a parallel there because that was what was current news when in those times.
Sure. Okay.
Okay.
No, I'll go with that.
Yeah, I'll go with that too.
Damn it. You guys think I've just been here for 200 years to make you laugh?
I pay attention
I'm not
to this
laugh.
Stuff. You haven't laughed once.
Never. Not at you, Jeffrey.
Hey, Badcasters, it's Gary. And as I listen to us deep geek and talk about these last few episodes of season 5, it makes me think about something for a second. You know, it's nice to know, all the fellow Babylon 5 fans, that it's not just knowing the minutiae about, Sheridan served on the Agamemnon, Sinclair became Vale, and Susanna Ivanova has some minor psychic abilities. But, when I hear that, everybody gets choked up at the same things I get choked up with, like, objects at rest and sleeping in light, that to me is the measure of a Babylon 5 fan, more so than some of the minutiae and the trivia. That, that not only that the show got to you on some level that you can't always explain or deep geek about, but, it hits your core and it means something to you. And that to me is the true definition of a Babylon 5 fan, not just knowing all the little stuff. Take care, guys. I got my box of Kleenex ready for sleeping in light, and I hope you guys do too. Bye.
He really needs to get out more.
No, he needs to park the car.
Exactly. Yeah, not get out more. Right. Put him in the garage and leave him there. No. Wait, don't do that. No. I was kidding.
No, Gary's got a good point, though. I would agree with that. I think that's one of the special things about Babylon 5 fans.
Yes. Warm and fuzzy. Hey, you know what? The boss, the guy who has the big red button there, he's telling me we got to take a break.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
That was easy. Look at the power I yield here.
Yield or wield?
Wield. I no, that's another show.
If you've got a Gmail account, the Gmail Podcast makes a great way to get the most out of it. The Gmail Podcast gives you quick tips on how to deal with the ever-increasing amounts of email we all get. You'll learn how to manage multiple email accounts in one convenient place and ways to keep all that information organized. The Gmail Podcast also keeps you informed of the latest new software features as they come available. And because you're busy, most shows are less than 5 minutes. Get started with the Gmail Podcast today by going to chuckchat.com.
And returning to finish this round of Feedback Apalooza, we're back. Brett's here joining us. Finally.
Hey, better late than never.
Can I throw something out there just to the universe? I'm going to do it anyway. Okay.
Okay.
I just wanted to, just as we were coming back in from break and I'm listening to that music again and I'm thinking how fantastic Christopher Franke's music was on this, on the whole project. And the fact that we've been able to lift that music cue and use it in our show and no one in all these 200 something episodes that we've done, no one ever gave us any grief for that. Thank you, universe. Thank you, Warner Brothers. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. I want to thank all the little people that didn't sue us. Thank you, because it made our
and show. Glad we thank you, Jeffrey, for making sure that they now do.
It's over now, man. I did my 200 episodes. My contract is up. Skid marks out the door.
That's awesome.
Hey, gang, it's John from Jersey. I know, long time no here. Just wanted to comment on your episode devoted to Wheel of Fire, and there was a lot of discussion about whether or not the treatment of Garibaldi's alcoholism was in some way cliche or followed in some time-honored footsteps of cinema, if you will. Well, if that was cliche, I'm kind of surprised that you didn't say anything about how Galen's pregnancy was handled. Because, well, I thought that Garibaldi's storyline was pretty well done. I thought that they were really treading on very familiar ground with Delenn's pregnancy. It was almost obvious from the get-go exactly where they were going with that, and they couldn't have done it in a more obvious fashion. And talk about cliche, that to me was very much a on the nose in terms of how they went about that. I know they probably didn't have time to do much else, but still, that seemed a little bit too familiar for my taste. Anyway, good to talk to you again. I'm sure you'll be hearing from me. Bye.
I don't get it.
Yay, Dijon.
I don't know. I think he makes a good point, and I'm not sure that you can dismiss that at all for, oh, I don't know, they probably didn't have enough time to do something else. Yeah, I don't buy that. That's not a valid out.
She could just simply say, John, I've got a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. You know, now...
Maybe I'm just confused. I don't know what the point would have been to have done something, quote, different.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, well, they made it a kind of a little bit of a touch of drama. She gets faint, she falls over, they haul her into med lab, and
Come on, nobody complained when they did it in Cocoon, did they?
Right, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Let's put it this way. It was cliche, but not in terms of the writing. It's cliche in terms of the human experience. You all know that it wasn't a big surprise that, oops, she turned up pregnant. Okay,
right.
We all experienced that. And, oh, wait, that means that this mother, this father have created this child, and this child is, from the moment it's born, has a certain legacy that it's got to live up to or be a part of, or it's in a chain or heritage or what. Yeah, I mean, so those are things that we all identify with. And I don't know that it was a... To his point, and I'm not saying that he said this, there was just a little bit of a cynical tone to it that was like, oh, wow, the great writing kind of fell short right there. I don't think it was that it was playing off of some other film or book or adaptation. It was, that's a life experience. We all get that. We figured that stuff out pretty quick. The minute somebody says to you, they're pregnant, you go, and you can already see how that person's life is about to change.
Right, right. And I frankly didn't find it that cliched, and Jeffrey, I think you really hit it right on the head. And I thought what they did with Garibaldi's alcoholism, I thought that was really well done. So for what that's worth, you know, I know we discussed it in depth, but it's all about the human experience, man.
Yeah.
Or the alien, if you so choose.
Well, only alien if you're looking at it from the human end. Otherwise, it'd be the Narn or the Minbari experience, yeah, or the Jeffrey experience.
The outside, the, oh, please, you don't want to be here.
Hey, Bad Podcasters, John from Jersey. Just got done listening to the interview with Jerry Doyle. Wow, that was different. I must say I am impressed that you managed to keep a guy who's used to talking and talking for about 3 hours straight every single day to less than an hour, more or less. That was impressive. Can't wait to see what other kind of comments come along from that interview, because I can anticipate at least some of them. Definitely a cue, guys, and it's good to see some of these high-profile stars and alumni of Babylon 5 coming back out of the woodwork. Hopefully we'll get a few more of those kinds of interviews post-Sleeping in Light. All right, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
What was impressive was the editing job that was done on that interview. May I just say that if anybody deserves a round of thanks, it's those who have to edit this, because wow.
No doubt.
Well done, Summer. Well done.
Thank you.
You know what else is No, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, Jeffrey, come on now.
Hey, that pastor is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm listening to you geek on Objects at Rest. And I have to tell you, I think you're being way too kind with Lanier. I mean, he is so obviously
Pass just love. He's like obsessed. Every chance he gets, to, he tries to be around Delenn. It's more than just infatuation or even love. He's really pretty close to stalking her. The whole take on, you know, him almost killing Sheridan. It's the, you know, it's a sign of his obsession. You know, he is actually sick and twisted. I think he needs some psychological help. You know. Everybody's like, oh, this is such a rogue thing. No, he's been starting to get a little bit creepy for a while now. I just don't think, you know, it was spotlighted, but it's certainly there. And when it comes down to it, if he just waited 20 years, Sheridan's going to kick off, and he could easily just, you know, jump right into the picture. But his obsession won't even let him wait that long. He's got to, you know, go after it immediately. It's, you know, I feel sorry for him. He needs help, but the nice Lanier from season one who, you know, wouldn't look up is long, long gone. And, you know, it's almost sad what he's come down to. I had hoped he'd end up somewhat more regal instead of pathetic. I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
You know, I would also point this out, though. Even in 20 years... when Sheridan's gone, Lanier still wouldn't stand a chance.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree.
How do you follow you know? A legend?
Well, and even beyond that, it's quite clear that Delenn doesn't share that same kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know what? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and in Gary's, the way Gary mentioned his change after season one, you could actually look back to the beginning of season two. And that one moment where he's guarding the chrysalis, that little Renfield moment where he goes, soon, I'm creepy, the way that was done.
Right. Yeah, no, right. I was going to say that, you know, every character on the show that endured the majority of the arc experienced their own character development in their own growth. And you can say that as a blanket statement for all of the characters, the ones we met in season one, or if they didn't show up till two or three or what, but we saw huge, huge changes in them as they progressed in the show. We won't take the time in this episode, but you could, I think, pretty easily argue that Lanier actually had one of the greatest personal growths through of all the characters. But I didn't mean to derail things here and start a whole new combat. But everybody else's path, you kind of, you know, you saw it and you saw it coming and all that sort of stuff. But man, that poor, he was like a little wussy water boy, and well, okay. I didn't mean to derail everything.
No, that's not a derailment. I think that's an excellent point, Jeffrey. You're right. Everybody, even with the major changes that happened, say, I mean, obviously, you look at the Londo Jacquard situation, even still, they are on, shall we say, similar career paths.
Certain paths, right. You could see that stuff coming.
Right.
Londo's rise to power was inevitable from day one.
Right. Jacquard's transformation to Holy Man, maybe not as evident, but after the episode Dust to Dust, where he basically has his Road to Damascus moment, you can see where that's going. Yeah, but mm-hmm. You're right. Lanier's, it is one of those where you can look back and you go, oh, yeah, like Summer just pointed out. Oh, that's kind of creepy what he's doing there.
Right. And going from that creepy boy to Ranger is a huge yardstick by which to be measured. And,
right.
And also, more than once in his arc, in his growth, did we see him make or contemplate making these immense sacrifices that nobody really would have known about. Sheridan, he could fart and everybody would go, woo, you know. But
yeah.
But Lanier was far enough in the background that he was one of those people that was famous but forgotten.
And mm-hmm. And that's part of his tragedy in that Shakespearean sense, is that the things he was doing, he could do because he was an unnoticed character, you know, in season five when he's tracking the Centauri shipping lanes and all that. the irony is that he was doing those as much to get Dolan's attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so here he is doing these secret covert things that nobody can know about.
Right.
But he's doing them to show the woman that he's frankly obsessed with at this point.
Right.
Look at me, hey, look Mike, at me.
So do you have, I think we got time for one more voicemail. Last one, sneak one in.
Hey, Bobcasters, it's Gary, and I'm just listening to you guys sum up on Objects of Rest. And one point you didn't mention that I think deserves mentioning is something nice that they did on the show. That scene at the end with Delenn and Sheridan at the, through the Zocalo, all those people are not extras. They were, you know, cast. Peter Jurassic and Andreas were both there out of makeup. Crew and all, you know, everybody that was involved, or at least a lot of people that were involved in the making of the show, they showcased and pictured, you know, during that episode. Yes, in the next episode we'll get a quick few shots at the end, but I think it was nice that the producers and director made the effort to include, to actually show all the cast and crew on, you know, on screen at least one time, you know, live acting. I thought it was a really nice touch to do. You don't see a lot of shows do stuff like that in wrap-ups. You might get one or two people, but, you know, the Zocalo was just teeming with the people that made Babylon 5, and I really like that point a lot. Take care, guys. Bye.
Wow. Well, as one of those people, Gary, thank you for even acknowledging it and letting us know that as a fan you saw that, because there is that frame-by-frame imagery that of the entire cast and crew that you have to sit there and with your VCR click through, you know, one frame at a time. But the fact that those people were all, that we were all in the Zocalo and that sort of thing, I appreciate as a crew member, you acknowledging that. And I will also say that you're also accurate in the, like, if you do your homework in the history of television programming, there are a handful of shows that ever paid that kind of tribute to their crew. And I only bring that to light because I know that you have heard me and all the other guests that we've had on this podcast. You've heard us talk about what an exceptional production company that was, what an exceptional experience it was, and the fantastic relationships that were developed there. You hear that all the time. On TMZ, well, not TMZ, but I mean, just on all those talk shows, you, whenever the celebrities are on talking about a show, they always go, oh, the cast and crew are so great, and we all get along so well, and we're all friends, and we're happy, and that's all true. It's not untrue. But I'm telling you that on Babylon 5, somehow that experience was heightened. Maybe it was the LSD and the Kool-Aid that Snackman did, but I'm telling you, there was an exceptional bond between all of the people on that show that lives to today. I ran into one of the crew members just Sunday at a breakfast meeting, and it was fantastic to see them again and all that. I mean, so it just, it really is true, and thank you for acknowledging it.
Yeah.
We're done.
Hey, Bathesters, it's Gary, and I'm listening to Tim talk about keepers and how the Drak are typically nearby. Well, I think it, who was it, Captain Jack at that time? I thought he had sort of a keeper on him, but at least I don't think the Drak were anywhere near. Plus, with him being like a freighter captain or something like that, he had to be traveling distances. So unless the Drak was actually on his ship, I think it kind of blows a little hole in the theory that they necessarily have to be right, you know, in close range to the Drak host. To, I guess, work or be active or whatever, however you'd like to say it. I don't think that distances are that much of a matter, or at least it doesn't seem that way from the Captain Jack issue. Londo, as always, is a special case. I don't know if you could use him as the typical testbed for theories. I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
First, let it be pointed out that Mike is the one who keeps running the voicemails.
And I'm with you.
I was going to say something.
Hey, we had one left. I figured, why not wrap it up? We're already over time.
You're driving the bus. It's all cool with us, dude.
I know, right? Yeah.
All right, there you go. But don't be sending me them false signals. My is filled with false
Well, I was ready to wrap it up, but I decided, you know, we had one left and it was Gary.
Over. The show is over. I'll make it wrap. But, man, come on, work with me, bud.
Important that we at least, you know, try and get Gary in. There's no, there wasn't enough Gary in this show. No, I mean, no, what, he had maybe a third of the voicemails this week? I mean, he's slacking.
No, actually, we started out with, what, 12 from Neil?
Yeah, right. I think Gary's getting competition. And Father Beast out of Utah, he's Father Beast,
wow. And that's, you can't stop listening to those questions.
That's right.
So, and Jersey, what exit, John? I'm right there with you, man. I'm all about that.
Well, that is it. That's all the voicemail.
That's okay, all. Then.
All right. Get us out of here, Summer.
All right.
That's all that I sent. Let's put it that way.
We have more. We always have more. There's always more. What's the word I'm looking for? More. So the website, BabylonPodcast.com. The email address is BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. If you want to email in your own recorded voicemail, because our voicemail line is busy, send it there. It'll work. Trust me, it'll work. Forums over at farpointforums.com. Come visit, chime in on the much longer and much more colorful conversations that we can't always have right here on the air with you. And of course, that voicemail number is 206?
It's something, people. We've got one. Hopefully you can call it.
Oh, God. I love it. It ends just like it started. Out of control.
206-338-2259.
Here, Summer forgot the number.
The 200 episodes.
It's been a week, and I have had a lot of fun.